Let's call the meeting of the Community and Regional Affairs to order. And we have two bills today, SB 352 and HB 585. I'd like to take up SB 352 as a first order of business. We've just been handed some material by the Alaska Municipal League. On this one in your file, you should have a copy of the bill and a fiscal note for preparation of the fiscal notes called for in the bill by Community and Regional Affairs. And Senator McKay just raised a question that had come out earlier, and we don't have a proposed solution. And that would be possibly, how would you speak to the issue of how much is enough of an impact so you would, in fact, prepare a fiscal note? And I wonder, Palmer, I think that matter may have come up before the House in some discussion they had. Is there, and Jack Chenoweth is here, I wonder if there's a possibility of qualifying the language to talk about major impact or some other kind of a method of limiting it. It seems we're talking about an estimate of the amount of the total expenditure, and it just seems there's a realm of reason that anybody preparing a note wouldn't go beyond, but maybe that's wrong. Palmer, I wonder if you could come up and speak on that, since yours would be the agency that would have to deal with this.
Madam Chair, the question was raised in the House Committee on Regional Affairs, Marie, and the Department, Marilyn Miller from Municipal League, I believe, was there. As I recall, it was raised as an issue, but there was no attempt at further definition of that language, of what would constitute an expenditure, or at what point would there be necessity to determine a fiscal note. I believe our testimony at that point was, if there was no attempt at further defining in statute what all that meant, we would just play it by ear and hope that whatever we decided as a department would be adequate on behalf of the municipalities, that we would just interpret it within the department.
Bob, would you like to, or Senator McKay, would you like to explore that? Incidentally, for the record, would note that Senator Kelly, McKay, and Rohde and Sturczewski are on hand.
Well, I was just trying to follow it, not only with CR&E, but natural resources, environmental, you know, right on down the line, and how nitpicky would it get or could it get? You know, a person in preparing this fiscal note might take a whole session to do it, you know, and maybe honestly so. If you're trying to, but, and I just wondered if it was possible to put some kind of a guide or, you know, if it wasn't going to have any kind of a major impact, would it be necessary? But if it is going to have substantial dollars involved in it, then certainly, I don't know if it's possible.
Yeah, to some extent, the department, usually working in conjunction with the Municipal League, even now attempts to make that kind of thing, particularly where there's a definite dollar type of impact on municipalities. We'll try to put that together now, and it's a fairly quick and dirty thing, sometimes getting on the phone, checking principally with the larger municipalities where we know there's substantial dollars, and probably averaging all second-class cities as a category. And of course we do that by assuming that that would be the level of fiscal impact on the second-class city. It may be appropriate, I don't know if Jack's ready to respond, whether he thinks there's a way to define this that would put more parameters on not only our department but others too as to what would trigger the need for a fiscal note. I say there were several concepts thrown out in the House CNRA committee, but as I recall, there wasn't any consensus as to any sort of definition.
And that's one of the reasons that it was carefully put in the word estimate, that you're looking for a guide. And I can give an example of when we passed on the state level some things that dealt with TRS and PERS, we were throwing a burden on the municipalities that was not recognized. And So it becomes a thing of scale, I think, of it's something you consider. There's the legislature could ignore that. It's a different thing with the fiscal note that has to be prepared by the legislature, because that means that you're going to have to increase somebody's budget, or you're going to have to have an appropriation bill. So it is a more kind of a guide in decision making than, and recognizing that, say, there is an impact out there. But I'd certainly be happy to see other language, but it's very hard to qualify or quantify it. I wonder if we could ask Jack Chenoweth, since we have him here on the other bill, if he might care to speak on this bill.
No.
You don't? But it was said so nicely, Jack, you'd have trouble not
Thank
responding.
Thank you, Jack. We appreciate that.
I guess I see a different problem. It's the situation that you mentioned. That would be bills that are not referred to this committee, that go to some other committee, one of the other committees. Do they stop to ask what the impact is on a municipality? Maybe this thing should be recast in such a fashion. It says that in all instances, the statute now says that a fiscal note has to be prepared by the first committee, the committee of first referral, either by statute or by rule of the legislature. So maybe you want to take that one step beyond and suggest that requirement be amended to say that the same committee of first referral indicate whether they see an impact on the municipality, and if so, what that impact is, either dollar-wise or what have you. That way your PERS or TRS example, if that kind of bill starts out in the HES committee, then the HES committee preparing a fiscal note, which is required to do now, would have to answer the question, does this bill have an impact on any municipality or school district, yes or no, and if so, what is that impact? That means it wouldn't entirely fall on the Department of Community and Regional Affairs to get that information together, but it would fall on each committee of first referral to at least look at and report or respond on that question. And each committee, I suppose, would be the determiner of whether the impact is so minimal as they would be able to say, no, it has no effective impact on a local government.
Do you see a problem, back to Palmer, on those bills in your review, your ability to make that determination that this would have an impact on community and regional affairs, or on the municipalities? Are somebody going to have to call you and ask you for this note in order for it to be prepared? The question of making that judgment value, this will have an impact on municipalities.
Oh, it's possible the department, as a matter of course, does get all the bills, and we look at all the bills, even though not all the bills affect the department, but I assume it would be possible that in screening a bill that affects administration or natural resources, we could make a judgment as we see the bill as to whether, in our view, it would have an impact on municipalities.
Seems to me that would be adequate to get that information going. It does throw a responsibility on you to check the legislation as it comes through.
Even now, Madam Chair, and where I guess it is difficult, different committees of the legislature require different qualities of fiscal mm-hmm. notes in terms of the detail they want. So I don't know how well you can define what would be required. As I mentioned, the usual routine that we do now is a courtesy by way of information to the legislature. If we are aware that this will have a fiscal impact on a community, usually in working with the municipal league, we at least try to get estimates on the major effects, and then what we may well do, as I stated earlier, is broadly categorize all second-class cities or all first-class cities, an average of what it might cost each one of them. So to some extent, we're doing a little bit of that now, but certainly not to the extent this bill would require.
What's the feeling of the committee? April? Now's the time.
That's the only problem I have.
Madam Chair, I would like to make one comment. We have attached a fiscal note. Until we get into it and find out what quality of fiscal note or how detailed they want it. And of course, it depends on how many bills are coming through and how many bills will affect municipalities. It's really a guesstimate, our fiscal note. And I hope that, for the record, that if after a year's worth of experience, assuming this bill passed, we find that we have underestimated, or I don't think we've overestimated, but if we've underestimated, the legislature would be willing through the budgetary process or whatever to give additional people.
I think those of us around the table could not speak to that with any authority, but we'd be glad to.
Well, again, I just want to point out, our fiscal note is based on who knows what will come down the pipe.
Fine, are there further questions? Fine, thank you, Palmer. Is there anyone else that wanted to make a comment on that? You, Marilyn Miller, here with the Alaska Municipal League, and you've are apparently supportive of this type of legislation. Do you have any recommendations you'd like to make? Okay.
Marilyn Miller, the Alaska Municipal League. The Municipal League wholeheartedly supports it, Bill 352. And I just had distributed to you some information that we have received from the Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations. It might help you knowing what some of the other states are doing. Fiscal notes estimate the effect on the expenditures or revenues of local governments implementing or complying with proposed state law. I will point out that presently 22 states have enacted fiscal note procedures covering proposed legislation affecting local governments.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Question. I don't think we had anyone else to testify on this. Is the committee prepared to take action? Senator Kelly?
Oh, Madam Chair, I move we pass the bill out with individual recommendations. I'm going to pass.
Senator McGee?
It passed.
We're looking to pass, I
are
suppose.
You really?
Yeah.
What's your problem?
Oh. I can see some problems. I'm in favor of what we might do would be worth the time to correct it, whether that would. Right. I'm supporting the concept. The English language is only so precise.
We were happy you were here. We're sorry you're leaving.
We have to go.
Okay. Great. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Standpoint in force.
Is that what we have?
Yeah.
We should. I was going to, as soon as we were done here, I was going to introduce the kids. I'm sorry they left. I wonder where they're off.
Sure, the committee meets all over today.
Is that right? Excuse me. We don't need to do that again. We've been recessed a bit here. Let's go on to consider House Bill 585. We do have in draft for you a committee substitute for House Bill number 585, and I would appreciate a motion to put that before the committee.
I so move, Madam Chairman.
Any objection? Fine. You have, for your help in this, we received a very excellent letter from Tom Klinkner, who's followed this study all the way along, dealing with this particular subject. And if you'll look at your attachment that refers to HB 585, it'll lay out the problem that we've addressed in the committee substitute. And Jack Chenoweth is here. Jack, would you be kind enough to come up and follow us through as to why we have a committee substitute and what it does accomplish? Appreciate it.
You provided a copy of Mr. Clinton's letter, and the committee substitute is based upon a suggestion he makes at page 2 of his letter toward the bottom, continuing over the first couple of lines on top of page 3. In drafting the original version of 585, that reference to Home Rule in 2908-010 was missed. Mr. Klinkner thinks that it should be picked up and corrected, and I think the point is well taken. That is what the committee substitute does. As to the rest of the points in his letter, both preceding and following, the points made probably are best discussed in the context of
those
580, which is the unorganized borough legislature.
Why don't you explain just briefly the question, though, because I don't think they've had that what does this accomplish in this section now? It just ties together.
The purpose of the bill was to allow a second-class borough to directly incorporate as a home rule borough. The law now says that first-class boroughs may become home rule boroughs by the adoption of a home rule charter. A second-class borough, and there are six or seven of them in the state, would, in order to adopt home rule status, first have to reclassify by election to first-class status and then go about the process of writing a charter and adopting it. The amendment in House, the language of House Bill 585 would permit a second-class borough to go directly to home rule status by charter adoption and election. And the additional provision that's now, that appears as Section 1 in the committee substitute is merely a correction in 29080810 to conform that provision to the operative change being made in Section 2.
Jack, I wonder if you could just explain a little bit the methods whereby you can petition, of course, and start the home rule process. Could you outline just briefly what the difference would be to go through the unified process, become a unified in home rule, and under other parts of the statute? There are two methods, are there not, to become a home rule municipality?
Well, you're talking about differences in home rule status. One would be a home rule borough or a home rule city, which is the borough or city, a first class borough or first class city, as the case may be, which adopts a charter and becomes, takes on home rule status. Confining the discussion just to boroughs would be a situation such as was followed by the North Slope borough. When they incorporated as a first class borough, they took a year and a half, and went through the process of writing a charter and submitting it to the people up there, and in adopting a charter became a home rule borough. The other form of home rule status is the form that comes as a result of the unification process as we now have it on the books, and that is where a general law borough and the cities within it unite under one form of government, merge into one form of government, which is styled a home rule municipality. It is a municipality which, in the process of being formed, adopts a charter, prepares and adopts a charter, and takes on a home rule status. This is the process that Anchorage, Juneau, and Sitka went through in order to achieve a single form of government. The net difference, I suppose, is fairly apparent. In Anchorage, Juneau, and Sitka, there is one form of government, one area-wide form of government. In the North Slope borough, which is a home rule borough, there are still a half a dozen cities that exist within that borough and still have functions to perform. The borough has a charter that it makes reference to, but does not have complete authority for delivery of services, performance of functions in all areas. There are still some things the cities do. So when you talk about home rule, I suppose it's home rule municipality, process of forming into one unit of government versus a home rule status as a borough where multiple governments still exist.
Fine. Are there any questions of Jack on the bill? Fine. Thank you, Jack. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on this bill? Fine. Ms. Bird? Yeah. Do you?
I think that I'm for home rule. I think it's very good because I believe in each city taking on its own responsibilities, and I think you like this too. But now, House Bill 585, I would like to see some wording change in it. On line 12 here, it says, a first-class municipality or second-class borough may adopt a charter for its own government, and I would like inserted there, if they don't already have one, or if they do not already have one.
Mrs. Berg, I might point out they would not have a charter unless they go through this process. A first and second-class city are what are called general law boroughs. They do not have charters. So if they go through this process, they could develop a charter, but they wouldn't have a charter.
Well, this would be for some that wouldn't have.
Well, no, all first and second class are general law. They do not have a charter.
Well, now I might bring up Juneau. Juneau had a charter, you know.
They were a home rule city, and that's the reason. They were home rule, although
yeah.
a city.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're not talking about that kind. We're not talking about home rule here. We're talking about first class and second class.
Well,
and they do not have a charter.
Isn't Juneau a first class city?
No. Well, it was a home rule city, which was a separate category.
Uh-huh. What is it now?
Well, it is a unified municipality
yeah.
that has a charter.
Well, this is one thing that I would disagree with, because I'm challenging the unified cities.
I see.
Because what that does is cross out the charter they already had. And they already had a city, charter. Now, you see, Juneau is a federal district within the state.
I understand that,
yeah.
Ms. Berg. We addressed that. We would not be changing.
How do you classify those? Those aren't classified in the law, and I wondered how they'd be classified.
We would not change the status. Any rights that exist under current law would not be changed. We're merely giving an option to people to have, to form a home rule
yeah.
and to write their own charter. But any existing claims, and I know you've been a long time
yeah.
interested because
yeah.
of the capital issue,
yeah.
would not be impacted by this.
Okay. Well, this is the same as... Well, the first one that was spoken about was a House Bill 586 along with Senate Bill 352, and I'm for a fiscal note. But this one, now I brought this authority from the law library because I think it's important on home rule cities, and I think it's important for the committee to have a copy to see.
Could you make that available to us?
Yes, you may have this.
Fine,
I brought
you.
It for you. So that you can see what they said on this home rule city thing and on another case that was challenged.
Mm-hmm.
So that there, you know, you might run into a little difficulty on some of those. Mm-hmm.
No, I'd be very happy to
yeah.
have that.
And
right.
I thought this might help.
Very good.
This is it right here, starting here.
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, I have that that case. Thank you.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
That very much. Is there anybody else who would like to speak on this, Municipal League or the department?
No, I'm not the last Municipal League. I'm a last minute substitute for Ginny Chitwood. So I prayed that I'm missing the committee substitute. I was handed a copy of House Bill 585, and you just said that there's a committee substitute out. Okay. I'm assuming
yeah,
that there wasn't a...
It's a technical
right.
change to bring another section into conformity with 2913-010.
Okay, thank you. Then the Municipal League seems to go on record as being supportive of this bill.
Fine, thank you. Any other testimony, anything from the department?
Madam Chair, just very briefly, the department does support this legislation, realizing, of course, it was one of the bills that was part of the interim committee study. We are concerned, there was considerable discussion on the House side, referencing line 20 of the draft bill, as to whether or not the 10% was a number that perhaps should be raised. I'm not speaking on behalf of the department to suggest it should be raised. Although I would reiterate some of the concerns raised in the House side, we thought, in fact, that they had amended that in their bill. Other parts of Title 29, I think, about the minimum that's cited anywhere in Title 29, either for initiative, referendum, or unification, has at least 15, and in some cases, I think, 25%. So I just throw out for your consideration before the bill moves on out, whether or not as a policy matter you want to allow 10%. There is a fairly expensive process involved in moving in this direction, and it does become just a policy question. Is 10% an adequate number, or should it be raised consistent with other types of petition processes allowed in 29 to at least 15. I think 25 might be a little on the high side. But, we're not speaking to any particular number. I'm just raising the question.
That was brought out to the committee before.
What did we decide before, you remember?
We didn't make a...
Just that we should have it higher?
Well, there was just a discussion, and it didn't really resolve into a specific
I hate to make it so high that the House would not accept it, but they'd probably accept an increase of some kind. You know me, the more people that want something out there in terms of government, the better off I feel about it.
Pretty hard principle to disagree with.
Yeah. Well, of course, the obverse of that is the difficulty in acquiring the signatures. But I realize there needs to be a balance.
10%. That's not even, Arliss, that's not even, that's not even 10% of the registered voters or the residents. That's only 10% of the votes cast in the last regular election in the municipality. That's terrible.
Of course, the question.
That's the mayor and his staff.
The mayor would probably be the one against it.
Of course, the question, again, goes to the voters on the ballot, and that's where everybody gets a chance to vote, and that's really where the matter will be decided.
But I maintain that, you know, we've talked about this before, but I maintain that you should have a sufficient number of people to show the interest before you go to the hassle of putting the people to a big, and these local elections all turn out to be big, nasty fights. And, so you should have, really, 10% of those votes cast in the last regular election in a municipality. Now, that's not really very many people to send this question into an election situation.
I wonder if we might ask Palmer, go over those figures one more time of the different figures that are used in the state law.
As I recall, the minimum on anything is 15%, and I think that's on... both initiative and referendum, and the percent of the number, if it's a borough of 7,500 or over for unification. But 15%, as I recall, is the minimum. There are some others where I think smaller size municipalities may require 25%. And typically the reference is to the 10% of the votes cast in the last regular election of the municipality, which, well, of course, may be mean anywhere from 20% to 50% of the population. No, 50% would definitely be on the high side.
No, no.
Senator Kell?
Anchorage normally gets a third turnout, a third of its population turned up for municipal elections.
A third of its
registered voters.
Oh, less than that.
Less than that.
A third.
20%.
20% is standard.
20% of the registered voters. Okay. So Anchorage has, what, 120,000 registered voters? Is that high? 90,000?
Well, now if you're going to purge it every 2 years, we'll have a different figure. So I don't know.
Okay, we're talking about awfully 10% of 20% of the registered voters is an awfully small number of the citizens that are being affected by Anchorage.
Well, would you like to consider an amendment to...
Well, yeah, I'd like to go 50%. We're not doing it that way, so how about 15%?
That seems like a rational approach. That would put it in conformity with whether or not there's...
other minimums.
Yeah, with the other minimums. Whether or not it's desirable to put it in conformity or not is, of course, another question, but...
Mm-hmm. Would you care to make that amendment?
Yes, I would move the amendment.
All right. Senator...
I'd ask unanimous consent then.
All right. Passed then by unanimous consent that we would make an amendment to make that 15% of the votes cast. Are there other concerns with the bill? Prepared to take action?
I would move the bill out with individual recommendations. I'm a do pass.
As amended?
As amended.
I'm a do pass.
I'm a do pass.
We adopted the CS.
That was a committee that was before us. Is there any other business to come before us today?
Adjourned.
Not the meeting adjourned.